Hello, welcome to the Flatville Pastor Podcast. My name is Marky Harrison.
And my name is Clint Nolder.
Hello, Clint Nolder.
Hello, Marky Harrison.
Today is episode 2.
Toozies.
So we made it to the second episode.
We did. Nope, we didn't get canceled.
We didn't get canceled.
Which is always a possibility. I mean, you just never know.
Right,
we did.
Right.
We did not get canceled.
We didn't. And today we have something extraordinary.
Extraordinary.
Mm-hmm. It's exceptional.
Okay.
It's an exceptional topic.
Let's go.
And it is the greatest killer of the church today.
Yeah. So for sure, when we were kind of putting to paper or to computer screen what we wanted to talk about, this certainly I thought was one that resonated, I think, with people who know a lot about church and have been in church for a long time. But also, I think people who don't want anything to do with church also will recognize, like, yeah, this is it. Now, I don't have any, like, scientific data. Like, this is just my experience. So right. I could be just completely flat wrong. I don't think I am. But I could be completely flat wrong on this.
Yeah, I mean, you could be.
It's one word. Starts with a P. Oh. That's right.
Okay.
Preferences.
Okay.
Yeah. Killer. Preferences are killer.
So the greatest killer of the church today.
Yeah.
Is preferences.
Preferences, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we're going to unpack that a little bit. Maybe you have a few things that come to mind when you think of preferences. It could be, you know, how you like your coffee or...
I don't like coffee.
Okay.
Coke
Zero, what temperature?
Let me actually tell you about Coke Zero for a second. We got a refrigerator here that gets a little too cold. And so I have fallen in love with these Coke Zeros. When you open it, it's got some ice in it, like with a Coke.
It's extra spicy.
That's it. Come on, let's go.
It's so good. It's like an ancient refrigerator, too. It's like it was put here in the 50s when the building was built. It was like brand new when they put it in. But it chills.
It does.
Extraordinarily well.
I could use one of those right now.
Yeah.
What's in our cups?
It's just water.
Water.
Sorry. Anyway, so preferences. I mean, when you think about preferences, obviously a lot of things come to mind, but let's orient ourselves into like a church setting, like on a Sunday experience at church. Like, what are we talking about? Like, I mean, when most church experiences have, you know, parking, you got to get there. They got things like music and seating and, you know, all of these things, but let's like start like pulling in the parking lot. Like, what are some of those preferences that people are looking for?
Yeah. You know, I think people are going to be angry.
Oh, okay.
Maybe.
Fine.
Maybe they won't.
Prepare yourselves to be angry if you're hearing
or
this
maybe
or watching this.
Or maybe they'll be like, maybe this would cause them to contemplate a little bit. So it's dangerous. We're walking on some dangerous ground.
All right. Ice cracking?
There are some places, a lot of times churches like us can be guilty of this, where we have preferred parking, you know, where we might have preferred parking for staff, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like we have some pastor parking or something like that. Or maybe there's even some parking for some, you know, influential people.
Oh, okay.
In the church. Like, hey, we're going to have a special place for you to park. And the thing is, I don't think that the intent behind something like parking is, you know, awful. I'm not sure it's taken into account some of the damage that it does.
Okay.
Which I think is not just parking, but all preferences.
Right.
So, you know, in particular, something that we try to stress in our church at Foundation is that if you're serving on a Sunday at one of our gatherings, if you're going to serve, then you need to park far away.
Mm-hmm.
That if you're volunteering that day, that part of that being a part of a team is we're going to leave spaces close for people who are coming to experience what's
that up. Might not make a lot of sense to some people. Like, some people may think like, well, if I'm spending all this time on a Sunday morning, like, shouldn't I have the privilege of parking closer to the building? I mean, I'm getting there early, and you know, some people, even like people who aren't volunteering, they think like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But like, in the grand scheme of things, how would you say that affects everybody else's experience?
Right. Yeah. I actually love what you just said. Like, you should actually be able to park closer if you get here before anyone else. Like, you actually should be able to, because physically the parking spots are there and you get first choice. And I also do believe you've earned it. Like, I mean, yeah, you're giving something that no one else that morning or a few other people are giving that morning. Like, you've earned it. I think when it comes to preferences, and this, hopefully this can set up all of our discussion. I got my Bible here. And I, knowing we were talking about this,
wait, I don't have mine. What's okay. The section on parking? I'm sorry.
Yes. No, it's, it's right in parking chapter 2.
Okay.
This one actually starts with a P also, called Philippians. Okay. But knowing we were going to talk about preferences, and I know parking just got started, but when I think through preferences, I've got a lot of them. And so this is something that resonates with me because I have a preference about everything.
I would say that about myself too.
Yeah. But I also have learned the more I've at least attempted to follow Jesus. There's this one particular place in the Bible that really just, I can't get out of my head when it comes to our preferences. And okay. It's, there's a guy by the name of Paul. He's a church planter. And, Paul is writing this to a church that was planted. And he's talking about some relationships and people kind of being in connection and community with one another and just how they ought to kind of act. And he mentions this, he says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, rather in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interest of others. Hmm. Now, he's just talking about like relationships. But I think when we begin to apply that to anything we do, obviously we are very relational people.
Yeah.
Holistic, just as a community. When we begin to take that and apply it to the very practical things in our lives, it's easy for us, specifically here at our church, for our volunteers to get on board with this easily. You know, it's just something we've talked about from the beginning that, hey, we're going to try to think through the interest of others in as many aspects of our life as possible. Mm-hmm. And so when we're going to already be in the mindset of serving on a Sunday morning, volunteering on a Sunday morning for our gathering, then we want to make sure that, okay, we're going to take all the decisions we're going to make are going to be made through that lens of today I'm giving myself for the benefit of someone else. And that even begins on the parking side, you know, right. And that's a small thing. I mean, honestly, I know parking is an issue. We thankfully haven't had to have an issue. Our volunteers have done such an incredible job on this particular issue. And it just, I mean, they're parking 3 and 4 buildings down and in the rain and in the cold. And they're walking past hundreds of spots that are wide open that they right. could have easily just pulled into to come and do their thing. I also think that these are a few things that our church has been very, I've been really proud that our church have gotten some of these things right. But I think collectively as a church, the experience that I've had in church as a whole hasn't always gotten these things right, is I guess what I'm saying.
Right. Definitely. I like what you said about things, even as small as parking can make a huge impact in somebody's experience, or, you know, like if they feel like they were thought of and prioritized right. in the small things, that adds up, because in the grand scheme of things, if you are thinking of others in something like parking your car, that's a symptom that you're thinking of others in most things, you know?
Yeah.
And so when those things are clearly not thought through and there's a little bit of selfishness happening, like on a Sunday morning and things like parking and seating, you know, it's evident because, you know, you're looking around and nothing was prepared for you as a first time guest or a new person on campus, you know, whatever right. it is. And so those little things can add up. And speaking of little things, I mean, seating is one that we yeah. kind of already shared our opinion on last episode. But if you are listening for the first time or watching for the first time, what do we mean by like seating being one of those things that can make a big impact?
Yeah. I mean, we actually just went through this a couple of weeks ago here in our church where things are just filling up And it's not filling up because all the seats are full. It's filling up because of the way that people who go to church week in and week out or a couple times a month, the way that they come in and take seats. Okay. And so a lot of times they'll come in and, you know, sit on the ends of a row. And then there'll be a bunch of seats in the middle, but they didn't want to scoot to the middle. And it could be because they want to be able to get out and use the restroom if they want to. And right. our aisles in between from the back of the seat in front of you to the, you know, the seat that you're sitting in, there's not very much room. And so it's almost like a stadium when you go and look into or to the Braves stadium. If you want to get down the row, they've got to stand up and you kind of, right. you know, kind of go, you know, do that whole awkward dance. That's kind of what it is like in our auditorium. And so, you know, they don't want to have to do that. And so they want to sit on the end, but then there's a bunch of seats that aren't being used in between. And so it feels like, hey, we're at capacity when we're really not, if people would just kind of move in. And so, I mean, from the stage a couple weeks ago, I just said, I had to say, hey, here's the deal. Remember, we prioritize people who are disconnected and we want to make sure that they have an opportunity when they come in to find a seat. And the example I give, and I give this to any other church that I help coach, is, hey, you got to think through parking and seating is enormously important. Because let's just take a single mom, for example, who wants to go to church. Let's just say she's got three kids. Okay. Right? So a single mom got three kids and has decided.
Single mom who works two jobs. Yeah. I know you're a little too old for that, but whoa. It's fine.
Wow. I actually have no idea what song that is.
It's okay. But,
okay. I'll look it up. I would ask Siri, but we're now
hey,
distracted.
Siri, what is a single mom?
Yeah. Well, who is it? Do you know?
It's Reba.
Oh, Reba.
Yeah. Oh,
maybe I should know that.
You should.
I should. Okay.
Country boy like you.
Or maybe you just didn't sing it well, Marky.
All right. My bad. I'm not as good as Reba. I'll say that.
Okay. Deal. What was I talking about? Oh, that's right. Single mom.
Yep.
That's right. Works two jobs. Three kiddos. And she wakes up on a Saturday morning and is like, you know what? Man, I've been trying everything. I think I want to do something different. I'm going to go to church tomorrow. And so then she hops on her computer or hops on her phone and Googles churches near me. And what she's looking for is I want something for my kids. And so she's like, just looking at pictures, just like, hey, do any of these churches look like they got stuff for kids? Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, let's just say she stumbles upon our church. Or it doesn't matter what church it is. But she finds a church that's like, hey, I see they prioritize kids in some way. So I think my kiddos will have a good time. So,
yep.
I'm going to do it. And so she gets up, she finds a service time and she's like, okay, man, they got 9 and 11. My kiddos are up early anyway. So we're going to go to the 9. And so she hops in the car and she gets ready to go and she's pulling in at 8:55, just perfectly on time.
Okay.
And then she gets out of the car and she walks up and she hadn't been to church in maybe 15, 20 years, right? Okay. She walked away from church. Last time she went to church was she was in high school. Right. And so now here she comes. Or however long, here she comes in. And last time she went to church, there was no such thing as kid check-in, right? Which is where you like check your kids in. We want to know their names and their age to make sure they go in the right classes, all right. Those things. She had no clue that was going to happen.
Okay.
But she walks up and, okay, well, this kid, how long is it going to take? Well, it doesn't take 10 seconds. It takes longer than that. Mm-hmm. Well, she was here perfectly on time. Well, now she's got to do the kid check-in thing and do their names, fill out the thing. And then she's like, okay, well, I don't want to just like... I want to walk them upstairs. So she walks them upstairs. By the time she walks them up into our facility, drops the kids off, she gets back down, the gathering's already started. Mm-hmm. And so she walks in and the lights are a little low and she's like, okay, well, now I got to find a seat. Well, all of the good seats, which are the ones close to the door and the ones on the end and the ones at the back of the auditorium, right? They're taken. Mm. And so then what does she do? She stands there awkwardly like, shoot, where do I go? And then finally someone like, hey, you can sit here. Great, cool. I didn't solve the probably 30 seconds she stood there, which seemed like 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so she gets through this Sunday. But I'm going to tell you when she decides not to come to church is the next Sunday when her kids had a good time. But honestly, she's like, goodness, if I've got to get there 10 minutes earlier and I'm already late. So and instead of me having to go through that experience of sitting or standing there in the auditorium and not being able to find a seat, since I can't get there on time enough to get a seat, I'm just not going to go at all. Hmm. And that's when we lost, you know, right. And yeah, they got a seat in the moment. We figured it out because people who go to a church, I mean, they were nice people, right? We like, hey, well, shoot, you're standing up, have yeah. a seat. Yeah. So they get a seat that Sunday, but they don't get the seat the next Sunday because they're not going to be there 15 minutes early to get all three kiddos up there and get them play. And then that's when we fought. That's when we failed. So we had a conversation a couple weeks ago with our church, and I was so happy this past Sunday. I walked in to the 11. I was outside talking to some people. I walked in. It's time for our 11 o'clock to gather, which is typically where we have the biggest issue. And all of the back seats were completely empty. All of them. All of the middle rows had people in them. And I was just, I mean, I had a big smile on my face. Like, thank goodness. You know, I mean, I wasn't sure how people were going to respond. Right. And then we had this conversation. So, hey, we've got to make some adjustments. But there wasn't a single person in the back rows, which meant that there were 50, 60 seats with no one in them. So that once the gathering started, those people who were coming in perfectly on time, but didn't know what to expect and ended up getting there a few minutes out, they had no issue finding a seat. It was great.
Right. And this conversation, if you're hearing that, like from the stage and you're the one sitting in the back seat or whatever, you're probably feeling like, oh, well, I feel a little called out. But when you put it in such a tangible scenario, like it's a little bit hard to look past that. And how those little things add up. Like, it's a little bit hard to feel still entitled after hearing that type of scenario for somebody who is brand new to church or is returning to church for the first time in years. It's, you know, you kind of have like a gut check moment, like, okay, well, this isn't really about me. Like, he's not looking straight into my soul on the stage, you know, me sitting in the back seat, you know, it's just, he's looking at the person who is struggling, walking in the door a few minutes late in the middle of the first or second song, trying to find a seat. Like, that's who we're worried about, you know? And so, I mean, hearing those little things add up into a scenario that could be a determining factor for somebody to return to a Sunday church experience, that changes things a little bit.
Right. And I mean, the two main things we've talked about, parking and then seating, solves the problem for this person who's disconnected, who's just trying to do something different, right? Mm-hmm. Like, just, she's lost all of her options, or she's went through all of her options. She's like, shoot, let me freaking give church a chance.
Right.
You know, I hated church last time I went because of fill in the blank, the way they, whatever those things are. But goodness, let me give it a shot. And then she shows up and there's a parking spot for her, where she doesn't have to lug three kids from a block and a half away, or what feels like a block and a half away. But there's a parking spot left for her because volunteers did the walking. And then there's a seat for her. Like, that makes a ton of difference. Both of those, for both of those things to happen, though, people who follow Jesus have to put their preferences on hold. And I don't think the people who are sitting on the end, whether it's our church or any other church, I don't think they do it on purpose. Like, I could care less if those people find a seat. I don't think that's really the attitude. It's just we got to be really careful, because our preferences just sometimes cause our behavior to follow. Like, the preferences are like, hey, come on, behavior, follow me. And that behavior oftentimes has unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. They weren't thinking through those things, which I had people come up to me after I mentioned in our gathering. They're like, hey, I hope you hey, no, this is great.
I repent, I swear.
I'm glad they felt comfortable enough to come and have the conversation with me. But I'm also glad to see that things changed just in 1 week. Like, we go from one Sunday, have the conversation, the next Sunday we've already seen some conscious say, hey, man, I'm going to do this a little different. But if followers of Jesus don't want to make those small things, you can obviously also see the other side of this. This is why churches die, is because people who have already found Jesus say, no, my preferences are so strong, they're going to lead my behavior. And my behavior, while it does have unintended consequences, I would prefer those unintended consequences rather than the discomfort I feel when I don't get what my preferences want.
Right.
You know, and that's the scary thing, especially when it comes like something as small as seating or parking, right? I mean, those are just tiny issues.
They are. And I mean, speaking of the scenario, like, let's just say single mom gets into the dark auditorium and she's looking for a seat and she finds a seat. And, you know, the next thing that her attention is on the music. So, and a lot of people have opinions about the music.
Yeah, they do.
So there's so many different types and styles of music that you can experience on a Sunday. And I mean, some of those are like, you know, more modern worship music, or we have hymns, or we have, you know, whatever else, fill in the blank. There's so many acoustic style music. I mean, you know more about music than I do, but I mean, I just to a normal girl walking into an auditorium, you know, things like the volume.
Yeah.
Make a difference, and the type of music and the overall curated experience.
Sure.
The equipment being used. I mean, all of those things add up. But if I walk in and maybe I'm the only person who has an opinion about something, or, you know, I don't hear other people talking about the volume, you know, maybe that's in a moment where I look at my own preferences and say, like, is this really important in the grand scheme of things? But anyway, I mean, do you have like a like an example or a moment or some type of scenario about music in a church setting that would play into this whole, like, you know, preferences killing the church?
Well, I think first, music is a huge hot button topic. I mean, goodness, back when in the 90s and early 2000s, the term that I heard used very often was that churches would have worship wars, you know, in terms of what style of music they'd have, contemporary or traditional, you know, and that the some of the church wanted, you know, hymns and the organ and the piano, and then some of the church wanted a full band and those kind of things. And so they would have these clashes, and almost like sometimes even create like two tiny churches on the inside. Like they have different gatherings, different styles. And, I mean, there are churches that still do that. You know, our church is just, we do two identical gatherings. Both are band led. But for sure, volume and style is a big deal. And it's one of those things where obviously, so let's start here. If anything, our gathering is going to be considered loud. You know, it's very rare that someone's going to come in and say, man, it just was so quiet in there.
What a quiet, you know, soft that's experience. Right.
It's going to be pretty rare that's happening. So ours is, I mean, our room is all concrete. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we purchased a former bank building.
Yeah.
And so the walls are concrete, the ceiling is concrete, the floor is concrete, and the back of the auditorium is enormous sheets of glass.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's just hard surfaces that reflect things all over the place. And so ours is going to be a little louder than most, for sure. I prefer it. How about that preference word? Mm-hmm. I prefer it. Loud and driving, and it so happens that my preference lines up with the style of music that we do. I don't think long term my preference will continue to line up with the style of music that we do. And that brings me to the question, why do we do what we do with our music? And so when we think through that, we've got two answers. First, when we talk about music in terms of the church, what is the role that it plays? And the role that it plays is it gives each of us as a follower of Jesus an opportunity to express gratitude or worth in God's direction. Music gives us that opportunity. But I think even beyond that, because we can do those things, honestly, without music, right? We can express gratitude and worth in God's direction.
Definitely.
However, I think one of the best things that music does is it allows us, everyone, to do something together. So it brings some unity to what's happening in the room. And that unity, some people will complain. In fact, I saw an article this week that says people aren't even singing in church.
Oh.
And they just sit there and watch and stare. As if that's the most important thing happening, like the unity that it's creating is that they're sitting there and they're singing together. And I think obviously you can make a case for that. But I also know without 100% that there are moments when people just take in what's happening and it's unifying the mind and the heart to receive what we're going to study when we open up the Bible. And that it's bringing unity.
Right.
It might not be, hey, I'm unified because I'm singing at the same time that you are, which some people might say, hey, that's the whole purpose is for us to sing together.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be that, hey, we're leveraging music to draw attention towards a very specific focus. And so we want to make sure that we're achieving that. So that's one thing in terms of the church, right? We want unity. We want to express gratitude and worth and acknowledge who God is. That's a big piece of insider, people who are the 99, people who are followers of Jesus. That's what that music does. However, for people who are disconnected from faith, people who are outside of the church, we also leverage music as common ground. Where we want to say, hey, we can actually achieve some things that we want to do in God's direction, and we can do it with things that you are very familiar with. And that's what that music becomes for them. It's just some common ground of, okay, this is something I can identify with.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can identify with what you believe because I don't think I understand it.
But I like this song.
But this right here, I mean, because music is so emotional, right? This right here speaks to me in a way that I'm not even sure I understand or agree with the words, but I'm seeing something that just resonates. I'm hearing something that resonates with me. And so when we think, our church in particular is for people who are disconnected. So when we are thinking through that experience of what are the ways we can create some common ground in our Sunday morning gatherings, music is a really big deal. You know, I mean, we want to make sure that common ground is being made. And so as we take a look at that common ground, I want them to experience things that they recognize wherever else they would go. So we've got a place right up here, just a couple blocks from here. Mm-hmm. It's called the Alamo, and there's live music there. And so I want them, when they go into the Alamo and on a Friday night or a Saturday night, if they for some reason decide to give God a chance on a Sunday morning, that is great common ground for them to walk in and hear and feel like, hey, this movement of music that's like, man, I can get with this.
It's not so different from what I like.
That's it.
Outside of these walls.
The message and those kind of things, the heart behind it and the intent and the audience that music actually is for. You know, we sing songs to God and about God, right? And so it's not a performance that, hey, we're going to put on this show for everybody there. Obviously, we want to leverage creatives and people who are artists and use music as art to do those things. And that displays some of the incredible ways that God creates people. Mm-hmm. And certainly some people can take that display and say, oh, they're just putting on a show. Yeah, they're putting on a show as much as when you walk outside and see a blue sky and you're like, man, right, that is incredible. Well, yeah, I mean, when God creates something, it's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And God has created people with these incredible talents to hop on stage and to become a blue sky every once in a while. Now, it's the difficult thing is when the people who are becoming the blue sky for everyone says, check out how cool of a blue sky I am. Instead of just want to let you know, the only reason I'm a blue sky today is because God allowed it. Mm-hmm. You know, when we begin to move or point people in his direction, I think that's when the intent stays correct. So when we think through volume, we've got to process all of those things and figure out, is this louder than I would like? Is this, can I hear everything that I want to hear in the room? The answer to that might be no. Now, what I won't advocate for is, hey, you know, we're making people's ears bleed, right? Like, I mean, that's not the idea. That's not the goal. That's not the goal at all. However,
is that why we have a jump bag? Yeah. In the auditorium?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Well, no, okay. We've never had anyone's ears bleed. Okay. We've had plenty of people have medical emergencies on Sunday mornings, and that's why we have a jump back.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, we're prepared.
Yeah.
You just never know. So we don't want people's ears bleeding. Like, that's not the idea. But I'm also confident, you know, I mean, in terms of the music scene here in Atlanta, we have a lot of people that are incredibly familiar with the music scene here in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And we're not providing an experience that is louder than your standard concert you would go to at any popular venue, not anywhere in Atlanta. In fact, it's probably not even close. But I mean, that being said, I don't think we get it right each and every week. There are some weeks where we could probably do a better job. And that's what happens. Yeah. That's what happens when you're in a space like we are. And I mean, everything that you, or I say everything, like 90% of what you see on a Sunday morning is done by volunteers. And those volunteers aren't always consistent week to week in terms of how they perceive what's happening or even their knowledge base and skill to be able to get from artists through the speakers in the system the same thing. It's just difficult. Mm-hmm. And so week to week, we evaluate those things and we try to make adjustments. Because again, we're not trying to create an environment that's uncomfortable and, you know, those kind of things. However, at the same time, we are still asking people who are a part of the church to consider this might just not be my thing. You know, right. That's it. You know, at the end of the day, when we talk about preferences, a lot of times it's not even the preference. It's what does the preference cause you to do? What is the preference? How does it cause you to behave or to act or to respond to what you're not appreciative of or what you don't prefer? And that's a lot of times where we get in trouble. It's not so much that honestly preferences are killing the church. It's the behavior that preferences cause that's killing the church.
Right. You know,
I guess that might even be a more clarifying thing. I don't know if that answers your question about music.
No, but I definitely think that puts things into perspective, because if maybe to you, you're like, okay, I feel like I just felt a little blood come out of my ears. I'm going to go to the production booth and see what's going on. It makes a huge difference if you walk up there and you're like, wow, way too loud this Sunday.
Yeah.
Or, you know, why did we choose that song? Or it, then if you went up and you were like, hey, I'd love to hear our, you know, planning process, like how we go about choosing our music and how we go about producing it in this way. Like, I would like some clarity on that so that I'm not, you know, just seething every Sunday.
And we've had, I mean, so I mean, goodness, this was part of the plan anyway, but it wasn't in reaction to this, just in case a few of these people are watching, because we've had some people mention it to me in the last couple of weeks, just like, hey, this is, let me share with you my experience about what I've, you know, experienced in the room or whatever. Every single time I've been approached by in the last couple of weeks has been out of a heart of, hey, I'd like to understand what we're doing. And I'd like to hear more about, you know, walk me through what you want me to experience in this and why this is important. You know, all of the folks that have had conversations have been super gracious and still mission minded on why we're doing what we're doing, where I can't say that's been my experience in my entire history of doing church. Our my experience in terms of church work here at Foundation has been vastly different than any other place, where previously I've had folks that have just been outright
angry.
We are done with how you did it this morning. That's all you need to know is now next Sunday, I want an adjustment, you know? And my response is, I'd like to adjust your rear end for you. You know what I'm saying? Like, which is why I probably do much better in a little grittier form of church work, because I just don't do well with that, you know? And honestly, I mean, a lot of times my mentality, when people get that angry, when the behavior from preferences gets that extreme of, I'm now demanding something from you, and I haven't even taken the time to be curious enough to discover or explore, my immediate default is kick rocks or kick cans, or else you can kick whatever you want to, just kick it somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's a whole nother thing. Like, it's not even about the music anymore. Sure. Like, it's about something else going on, you know? Like, if you have become so detached from your actions in the way that you respond to something as small as the volume of music or the type of music that somebody, you know, is playing on a Sunday morning, then, you know, it's a whole other thing.
And moving forward, like I said, I think my preference right now aligns with the style of music that we do. I love the full band type thing. I don't think it'll stay that way. I think my preference will stay that way. I don't think what we do on Sunday mornings in terms of the music experience will remain the same.
Right.
And I don't know what the next kind of iteration of that will be. I mean, goodness, I would love it if it was hip hop.
Yeah.
That would be fantastical.
That would be awesome. Great. If you're hearing this,
that's it. I mean,
we'd love you to come here.
I don't think we can afford you, but if you want to come volunteer with the rest of our volunteers, let me look into the camera. Lecrae, if you would like to come volunteer with the rest of our volunteers on a Sunday morning gathering, let's go.
Let's go.
What I'm saying? That's just me and you, baby. Just me and you.
Love it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how that would happen, but I don't know what's next, but I do know this. I've got to make sure that as the lead pastor here at Foundation, that I'm not the reason that we don't move into the next thing because of my preferences, you know, which means I've got to be willing to have some real conversations with people who are probably a little more out front on this than I am. And on the leading edge of what we're seeing in culture, and said, hey, let's make sure we continue to leverage the music experience to create common ground with people who are disconnected while still achieving the same things we need to from a 99 perspective of we want to show worth and adoration and gratitude in God's direction. And we want to create unity moving us towards a moment where we're going to open the Bible and study it. Like we can do both of those things constantly. And the truth is if let me just talk to followers of Jesus for a second and we'll move on to whatever's next. If you're a follower of Jesus and like, I mean, let me start over. If you're a legitimate follower of Jesus, let's be honest, you don't need anything to show affection and worth and adoration and gratitude towards God. You don't. You could be in a room with an out-of-tune piano and the worst hymn singing worship leader of all time that doesn't know the words and can't sing a lick on tune. And even in that moment, as a follower of Jesus, we can still achieve everything we need to express worship and gratitude and worth and adoration in God's direction. We don't need those things.
That's right.
Right? We can do it. It makes it a little easier for us. I think just because we don't need it doesn't mean that we shouldn't leverage the blue sky God's painting in some of our artists, of course. But for sure, when the preferences lead to behavior of disassociating with a congregation or a church or a family of believers or a community of believers, because they won't provide me the experience that my preferences demand on a Sunday morning, I think that's a very slippery slope for followers of Jesus, because relationships and community are so valuable. And if you would throw those away because someone can't sing well enough, or it's not in tune, or it's not the style of music that you like, man, that preference has convinced you that your preference is more important than the people. And I think that's devastating.
It's very upsetting. And I mean, to think that you would be missing out on all of the greatness and goodness that comes from being in community with people who may have a different preference than you, or, you know, I mean,
yeah,
it's upsetting. But anyways, to summarize the music portion of these preferences.
Yeah, we've talked a lot of music.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, it's a huge part of a Sunday morning. So music is super impactful and a huge piece of worship and adoring God and relationship with God. Like, we express adoration for God through music.
Yeah.
And in a way that we can't or don't experience the same in other things. So there's that. And then also experiencing music can look different than everybody else in the room. Mm-hmm. You can stand there with your arms crossed, lips sealed, and still be experiencing the music and the words and the content the same as somebody who's throwing their hands up in the air like they just don't care.
Yep. Still creating unity.
Yep. And the music that is chosen on a Sunday morning experience is not about most of the people in the room. It's about the few people in the room who need a connection to something that they see in their normal life. Like, they need to see something, and that something in this scenario is music. Like, if they can connect to the music at the first beat,
yeah,
then that's a huge win. Like
common ground.
Yeah. It's creating common ground for something that they experience in their normal everyday life. And if you do have a preference with the music and you think that it's something that is stirring in you enough to say something, choose curiosity first.
Yeah.
Choose curiosity instead of complaining, because that by far is going to keep your perspective on not yourself. It's going to keep your perspective on the people who are a part of the production and the talent and the people who are experiencing it, every person in the room besides you.
Right.
So, I mean,
it's a good summary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I think that's my job here, right?
Hey, I mean,
it is today.
The ship.
It is today. I'm the captain now. Anyways, well, music, obviously what comes next on a Sunday is, what are we talking about?
Yeah.
What is the senior lead executive? What is the pastor talking about?
Yeah.
On a Sunday. And that has, I mean, people got all kinds of opinions about that, but
they do.
One of those huge things is people love to see their ideas and perspectives represented on stage. Things like political and social things that maybe are easier for them to connect to than whatever pastor is talking about today, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes things happen in the news on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, mm-hmm. and they're looking forward to Sunday to see what that's pastor's right. going to say about it. So, I mean, we can talk about a few of those things if you want. I mean, some people come in and prefer to see their ideas represented on stage, or they prefer to come in and they don't want to discuss that at all. Like they'd prefer like these important, huge, you know, elephants in the room to be ignored.
Right.
I mean, what is your experience as a pastor who speaks from stage and has conversations with people, I'm sure, about political and social issues and how they feel that those things should be represented from stage? I mean, what is your experience with that?
It's all over the map, you know? I mean, just like you said, I mean, there are some people that sit and wait for events to happen in culture and then want them directly talked about on a Sunday morning in the context that it happened inside of culture.
Mm-hmm.
And there's other people that are like, hey, this doesn't belong inside a church. This is a private, you know, conversation, it's a private decision. And so mm-hmm. we don't want the church weighing into this, right? Separation of church and state.
Oh yeah.
So the church shouldn't even have a say in these kind of things, you know? And it goes back and forth. I mean, especially in the political climate that we exist in our culture, in our community, in our country, in that political climate, I mean, it just depends on what the issue is currently at the time and whether or not either side feels like they have a biblical case. If we're talking about Christians, like if either side feels like they have a biblical case for their thought or their belief,
mm-hmm.
or the issue that they're supporting. And if they feel like they have a biblical case, they want that case made, you know, allowed.
Yeah.
And typically if they don't feel like they have a biblical case, they're just like, well, I don't think this is a very, you know, whatever decision that I don't want the church to weigh in on. Then they get offended if the church does weigh in on it because, you know, maybe there's a thought or a, you know, some thoughts from Jesus or someone else that kind of informs or speaks directly to it. Those kind of preferences is difficult, which, you know, what I want for our church is I want a church that is a melting pot of different ways of seeing and viewing the world with different experiences and different baggages. And so I would love for people who vote Republican and Democrat to go to church together, and as well as, you know, independents, right? Libertarians, whatever. Like, hey, I want them to all worship together and not say, hey, we need to be 100% on this one other platform in terms of, you know, politics or, you know, again, whatever social issue. And I want everyone to think like me on this so that we can rail against people who don't think like this from stage.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we talk about, we want to create a You Belong Here movement. and you belong here. excuse me. You belong here. Movements are extremely difficult because when we say you belong here, the you in that is you, whoever's listening, whoever you are, the you is you. And so you belong here, which means that whatever baggage you've got or whatever preconceived notions or whatever experiences you've gone through, all of those things, you can bring them and then you can belong. Mm-hmm. And that's extremely difficult work to do because just because it's your experience or your belief doesn't necessarily mean that it's right. Mm-hmm. However, we still want to make space for people that 100% disagree with Jesus.
Yeah.
Right. So when I say it's not right, I'm going to look at how does Jesus inform this principle or this issue or whatever? Like, how does Jesus inform this? And what does he say about it? If he, like, let me take that knowledge and then let me apply it to practical things in our world. And so there are things that are just blatant.
Yeah.
You know, like. Yeah. I mean, you disagree with Jesus on this. Mm-hmm. But even still, I want to create a space where you belong, you know, and that's hard.
Yes.
And so when we think through teaching on a Sunday morning, and when we think through looking specifically at what the Bible teaches, what we don't get an option with is we can't, and honestly don't want to change what we are supposed to be teaching from the words of Jesus or from the words of the early church, who are closest friends of Jesus, right? We don't want to change those words. We don't want to water those words down. We don't want to substitute our words for their words.
Right.
We want to trust. We want to trust what has been given to us through people like Luke, who was a historian who wrote two books in the New Testament, through the church planter Paul, who traveled all over and planted churches in various cities and explored many different cultures, was a Roman citizen, and so was exposed to all kinds of different thoughts and worldviews. We want to take that experience in that early stages of the Jesus movement, and we want to discover, hey, how did they approach these issues? And we want to then uncover that for the entire world, because we think that the good news of who Jesus is, even if we disagree with some of his stances and thoughts and his moral standing, even if we disagree, we still think it's good news. Mm-hmm. Right. And so we're caught in this tension of a you belong here movement, but we don't get to change the truth. And that's why it's hard work. Mm. If I got to change the truth, the You Belong Here movement, much easier.
Way easier.
So easy. But if we can teach on Sundays in a way that helps people go on a discovery journey, where they start the journey with, I already think I probably have a conclusion about whatever we're talking about. Mm-hmm. But then my approach is not to tell them, hey, you're wrong because Jesus says this. Like, that's not the way I want to teach. I want to be open-minded and say, hey, I also, before I started studying this particular issue that we're talking about, this passage we're looking at, I also had a preconceived idea of what this was going to be. But I had to study. I had to open the Bible and I had to study in a way that said, if I'm wrong, I've got to have some integrity and tell people this whole time I grew up thinking this. And the more I've studied the words of Jesus and the words of the first century church, I might not have been as accurate as I thought I was because I discovered something I had previously not discovered. And so I try and help people have that same attitude as we study together on a Sunday morning.
Right.
That they would say, hey, I've got some preconceived ideas, but the way you're presenting it causes me to say, I'm open-minded enough to say, I might not know everything about this issue. I might feel very passionate about it, but I might not actually know everything I need to know to make a well-informed decision about whatever it is I'm passionate about.
Right.
And that's what we attempt to do.
Yeah.
Whatever the social issue is or whatever we're teaching on, that's it. And there are some things that Jesus doesn't explicitly or specifically say, this is what I think about, right? I mean, you could probably think of all kinds of crimes that are not specifically mentioned in the Bible. Mm-hmm. Right. But we know, like, we're not supposed to do those things. Right. That's bad. It's bad for our community. It's bad for our society, but they're not necessarily mentioned in the Bible. What we find in the words of Jesus are principles. Mm-hmm. And those principles inform how we make decisions in our lives practically every day. And so we want to teach principle living that helps us in the practical application week in and week out. Mm. So, and that, I think that's why Jesus was so brilliant, is he knew my words are going to last generations and generations. And the things that you will struggle with are not going to be the first century Middle Eastern issues.
Right.
You're going to have so many other things. And so let me dive into some principles that really establish how you approach every situation.
Yeah.
I mean, when the church planner Paul was talking about preferences, about how we should value other people over ourselves, he wasn't thinking about parking and seating in a church auditorium. But that principle informs how we ought to approach parking and seating in a church auditorium in 2023.
Yeah.
Right. And it's the principles that we want to chase down. It's the principles that are important. And then we get to spend some time wrestling with how do we apply those principles to our current life, you know? And so I don't think you necessarily have to come to a complete conclusion on Sunday because I teach something. I think it can teaching on Sunday can just be a catalyst for more discovery. And what I found is that when people discover the truth, a lot of times that truth sticks with them better than if I just told them flat out, hey, let me make this easy for you. Here's the book, chapter, verse. This is exactly what God says.
Right.
Exactly what Jesus says. And if you disagree, you're dead wrong. Mm-hmm. I just don't find that typically works.
Yeah.
You know, it just, I don't think people want to experience life that way.
No.
People want to be right.
Absolutely.
100%. But the way that people oftentimes arrive at the correct conclusion isn't through being forced. It's through them self-discovering, hey, here it is. Now, there are moments, though, when we don't have time for someone to self-discover, right? There's a kid that's about to run out into the road to chase his football. I don't have time for him to self-discover. There's a car coming.
Right.
And it's going to smash you.
Yeah.
No, I reach down and I grab them by the collar and I pull them back as fast as I can. And their shirt rips the front of their throat and it hurts. And they're mad at me. Like, what in the world were you doing? But here comes this bus that goes right by. Yeah. And it's like, that's what I was doing. You know,
they're pissed because they look ridiculous. Right. Uh-huh. And they're scared now because they realize, oh, my life is in danger. But you know, you're just out here saving lives.
So it's it. Just one life at a time. Yeah. So there are times when that's what is called for on a Sunday.
Right.
I don't think those moments are very often.
Yeah.
Most times, while I feel a sense of urgency, most times I have the ability to, or at least the opportunity to flex, hopefully, an ability to help someone discover a different way of viewing or thinking through a situation than me just coming out and hammering over someone's head, you're wrong. Jesus is right.
Right.
You know, I just, again, but people who are very passionate about things, especially Christians, you know, sometimes are a little aggravated that I would take the long route instead of the quick, direct, you know, route. And it just, I don't know. That's just where I'm at on it.
Yeah. And in any healthy relationship, there should be some room for disagreeing.
I mean,
you should allow your spouse, your friends, your children, your coworkers to disagree with you.
Yes.
Because if you're in a position where you aren't allowing that, then there's no room for discovery. There's no room for exploration. There's no room for actually you're not giving yourself the opportunity to help somebody in the process of maybe changing their mind or opening their mind to an idea again, or for the first time. So allowing somebody to come to the conclusion themselves rather than just blatantly stating what you think is right from stage or from wherever, from your desk, wherever you are, that's 100% going to be more effective than, I mean, think about it. If you're listening, think about how many times you can in your life that you experience life change from somebody being like, well, no offense, or like, I don't know if you know this, but this is what I have to say, you know, like those moments, sometimes there are exceptions to that rule. And you're like, wow, that was a big wake up call for me. That changed my mind.
Yep. They pulled you from the bus.
Right. Yep. 9 times out of 10 though.
Right.
You come to the conclusion yourself through your experience, through you observing how these principles changed the way that you experience things in your life. So I mean, those things, meaning like, I mean, we're talking about political and social issues. So like if you begin to look through the lens of the principles in the Bible that Jesus lays out on certain things or not specific things at all, you know, like you said, there's not a whole lot of specificity in, you know, Jesus talking about how to use your iPhone in a godly way, you know, like there's not that doesn't exist. And so you have to use your noodle, use your brain.
That's right.
And see how these principles will play out practically in a world that is much different than it was when the Bible was written.
Right.
So.
And I say that to say, or we talk about this, when we evaluate how we teach and the process that we kind of go about it, if we're not seeing people's lives actually change, then I've got to change the way I'm teaching. Mm. So for sure, another principle that Jesus gives us is that a good tree bears good fruit. And so I want to know, like, okay, if I'm going to take this approach of taking people on a discovery journey every Sunday, in our gatherings, if I'm not seeing like results from that, well, then I need to reevaluate. It doesn't matter if that's the way I prefer to lead people. I'm not getting any results.
Right.
So I've got to do something differently. Whether again, I want to or not, if that's the whole idea of what we're doing. So the reason we continue to do it the way we are is that we're seeing people's lives change.
Yes.
And we're seeing people's perspectives about what's happening in the world change. And in a way that aligns with who Jesus is. And so as long as that continues to happen, we'll continue to tweak and explore in this particular way of approaching how do we study the Bible together.
Right.
But that being said, again, as soon as it's not working, hopefully, you know, I'm not, you know, stubborn enough and our staff is not blind enough that we would miss that and say, hey, this isn't working anymore. Maybe we should look at a different approach.
Right.
You know? The truth of the Bible is not changing.
No.
Right. So it's just how we communicate that truth and help people discover that truth. It's going to change. And it's got to be on the table for us to make those changes as we go.
Absolutely. And just to bring it around the mountain a little bit, we've talked about so many different subjects. I mean, topics, something as small as parking, just something as huge as, you know, political and social issues and spoken from the stage. I mean, there's so much, but in all of that being said, they all in their own way, when our preferences get away from us and they begin to develop our behavior and inform our behavior in a way that we are no longer prioritizing others, we're no longer serving our others with our preferences, that is what is killing the church.
Yeah.
And there's so much else that could be said about preferences. I mean, think of how you like things, you know, like any of that can directly affect the church. And if you are a Christian, if you are a Jesus follower, you would say that you believe Jesus is who he says he is. Any of your preferences has a direct cause and effect with the church. And so, I mean, I don't know if you want to like summarize in a way of how we've talked about preferences in the subject of how it's killing the church. I mean, we've touched on what that looks like in different ways, but I don't know if you have a summary for that.
Yeah.
But.
So I'll read the next little piece.
Okay.
I think would be good. I wasn't sure if I was going to read it, but I think it makes sense.
Okay.
When, let me find it. So after Paul says that little verse earlier, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, rather in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interest of others. He then follows that up with this: in your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus. And here's the big part: who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. Being found in appearance of a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. When I read that, especially verse 6, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God as something to be used to his own advantage. In other words, he said, hey, as the Son of God, he was like, hey, here's the deal. I've got God-like status in my hand. And I could certainly, because I've got God-like status in my hand, I can use that status for my own advantage. But instead, he let the status go that he could leverage for his own advantage. And he became, the big word is humble, right? So instead of using my status to my advantage, I'm going to humble myself and I'm going to step in to serve other people. And I think that is the preference talk. The reason preferences are killing the church is because the behavior that preferences lead us to are opposite of Jesus, which makes sense. If Jesus is the one that saves the church, anything that is the opposite of the Jesus, of course, is what's killing the church, right? So if we're not going to take a position of humility in the things that we hold in our hand that we could use to our own advantage, if we're not going to let those things go the way that Jesus let those things go and begin to serve people instead of using those to our advantage, then we're doing the opposite of what Jesus is doing, which then it makes sense that the church is dying, because when we do what Jesus wants us to do, that brings life. When we do the opposite of what Jesus wants us to do, it brings death. And so when we hold on to our preferences and we use them to our own advantage and our own desires and our own liking and our own experience, and we make sure we prop those things up and we prioritize that experience over every other person that we come in contact with, and that's the most important thing, and that's the make or break thing for us, it looks nothing like Jesus. Mm-mm. It looks like the opposite of Jesus.
Right?
I don't want to get too specific, but it is. It looks like the opposite of Jesus. Right. It looks, honestly, it's disgusting. Is a good way to put it. It's just, you sit in the room with people who are supposed to have a common goal of disconnected people getting reconnected with God, and you see. And I'm guilty of this, right? I try not to be as guilty of it anymore. But there was a time in my life where, honestly, I would be the most disgusting person in the room. And because I leveraged what I wanted and manipulated because of what I wanted and held on to the things that gave me an advantage. And I'm sure the people who were on mission just sat in the room and looked at me and were like, you disgust. This is gross. Like, how can you miss what Jesus is actually calling us to do? You're so concerned with what you can hold in your own hand and what you can use to your own advantage. I'm sure. Cause I feel that sometimes now when I have conversations with followers of Jesus, they just don't get it. You know, we've made something else the most important thing, and preferences then drive that behavior, lead that behavior. And then we wonder why there's 340,000 churches in the United States. 80% of those churches are plateaued or declining. And we're like, why? why doesn't the world want to go to church? Well, the world would love to go to church. The world just doesn't want to go to your church.
Right.
And when your preferences drive your behavior, it becomes your church.
Right.
And so 80% of churches are driven by the whims of a few people.
Mm.
And unfortunately, the church wasn't meant to be driven by the whims of a few people. The church was meant to be driven by the mission of Jesus.
Right.
And turns out, as of right now, like only 1 in 5 of us are getting it right.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah. And I mean, when a church is driven by anecdotal evidence, by preferences in the room, mm-hmm. by a few voices in the room, it can be the greatest detriment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But on the flip side of that, when a church is driven by the voice of Jesus, the biblical evidence of the principles that we're to be applying to things as simple as parking and seating, that can be our greatest ally and a huge tool in the mission.
Yes.
So, I mean, just to put that together, it's one way or the other. Like we get to choose how we use the tool of preference, how we leverage our preferences. And it has everything to do with the individual.
Yeah.
And so that brings us to the conclusion that like it doesn't happen overnight.
No.
It's a slow death, a slow burning.
It is.
And it can look different no matter where you are. But overall, when you apply the overall theory of preferences to how it could be killing the church or how it is killing the church, it's undoubtedly boils down to the individual.
It does. Yeah, because I mean, the truth is, and I guess kind of to wrap it all up, preferences drive every decision, mm-hmm. right? I mean, our whole life is preferences. I mean, the hat I'm wearing, the reason I wear flat bills instead of other ones, it's preference.
Mm-hmm.
The hiking boots I have on, I like these hiking boots. It's my preference.
Yeah.
I mean, goodness, even the Bible that I read out of, like I got this Bible because I like the color and this feel of, I don't even know if it's real leather or fake leather. I don't know, definitely, but this was fake. Okay. This was for sure my preference.
Yeah.
My iPhone, I would not use that ridiculous green bubble phone. Disgusting green bubble phone. Ugh. I mean, why would I inconvenience all of my friends and the people I love with green bubbles? Why would I do that?
They've clapped back a little with the whole messaging thing.
Have they?
Yeah. Because, you know, Apple came out with the whole liking a message thing.
Yeah.
And it was annoying for everybody who had an Android.
Yeah.
Well, now Android has the same thing and now it sends a separate text message. So if they like something or heart it, it's like, you know.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. That's their problem still. I don't know. I'm not even taking time to discover what those green bubble phones are doing. I have no time in my life for that. Well, anyway, like it's all like we're driven by preferences.
Yeah.
And the thing that we just got to make sure is that even though we create this rhythm of preference in our everyday life, in terms of mission, in terms of the reason we exist,
mm-hmm.
we've got to be careful that something as small as preferences don't drive mission and purpose.
Right.
And that mission and purpose have to drive everything. Preferences get to come along on that ride.
Yes.
Mission and purpose don't get to come along the preference ride.
Right.
And as long as we can keep those two things straightened out and keep preferences in their proper place, we'll be fine. We'll be just fine.
So if you're listening and you're thinking, this is not at all what I wanted to talk about today, then dang. We'd love to hear it.
But if you made it this far, I mean,
clearly you enjoyed at least a little bit.
Yeah.
You enjoyed a little something.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so Why don't you tell the people where they can tell us?
So you can do a couple things. The easiest and the quickest thing is that you can, excuse me, sorry, Mike. The easiest thing that you can do is you can throw a comment wherever you're listening to this, whether it's, or you're watching YouTube or podcast, whatever. You can do that. If there's comments available, you can put a comment there. Or you can, if you want to be anonymous, like, hey, I don't want everybody to know this is my thing, because when you post it, obviously they're going to see who posted it. If you want to be anonymous, you can just text the word podcast to 678-661-6330. And when you text the word podcast, it's going to respond and say, hey, what do you want us to talk about? And it's anonymous. We have no idea who's texting in.
Right.
And so you can just throw in there, hey, this is something I want to be addressed. And then we'll take a look at it and see if we can't make that happen. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And even if you did enjoy what we talked about today, or you just want to throw in an attaboy or whatever it is, you know, you'd like to share something, we'd love to hear it on either comments or text podcast.
Should we tell people to smash that subscribe button?
Smash that subscribe button right now.
That's right.
Yeah.
What do I say? I like, subscribe, and there's another one. Hit the bell. Yeah.
Oh,
hit
the
bell.
Hit the bell.
That's right.
To get notified.
That's right.
Those when are when we drop the new podcast. I don't know if there's a bell on our platforms. I mean, there definitely is on YouTube. So
yeah, deal.
I don't know if we're saying that anymore. I don't know if that's like a thing.
I don't know.
We're definitely not YouTubers. Yeah. But anyway. We want to thank you guys for listening in and for joining us in these conversations. And, you know, we hope you have a great March.
Happy March.
Yeah. Happy March.
Deuces.
Deuces.